Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But not only are we streaming on the Odyssey app where you can rewind and you can listen on demand, we're also streaming live on the TuneIn radio app as well as the iHeartRadio app. I send out the link to all of those streams each and every day over on the Everything app at JWright929ESPN. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day, Jeffrey. Just, of course, got to remind everybody, come on down to South Haven. Play some music bingo with yours truly at 10th Inning Sports Bar. And the mic just does not want to cooperate today. But come on down. It's a great time.
Today, we are doing it tonight?
Yes, okay. Tonight.
And where will we be tomorrow?
Tomorrow, obviously, this is all pending.
TBD, yes,
TBT, of course. Kevin always on me about everything. But tomorrow should be more music bingo at Hamp Line Brewing. And then Thursday, some general knowledge trivia down at Dan McGinnis.
All right. So, of course, we'll update everybody each and every day for where you can play either music bingo or trivia with George. My company as he is every Tuesday on the program. He's the host of VSiN's College Basketball and Football Betting Podcast. New football betting podcast available today. You can follow him on the Everything app at 1TimMurray. He's also the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Tailgate Show, Saturdays, 8 a.m. Central Time. Check your local listings, VSiN Primetime as well. Tim, good day, sir.
What's happening, man?
Oh, not much. I mean, we're kind of in a pretty great stretch on the calendar. This is when it really starts to heat up. The Americans, I said yesterday, did some of the best garbage time work that the country's done basically since World War I. Made that at least marginally interesting on Sunday afternoon, but now we turn into where we have all-day baseball. Playoff baseball is the best. Can't get enough of that. We've got football rolling. We have meaningful games. Like, I think this is pretty much my favorite time in the calendar.
Yeah, this three-game little sprint here, initially, because I really liked the one-game wild card. I thought it was, you know, the anticipation, the pressure. I went to the 2019 game between the Brewers and the Nationals, which is maybe a top three sporting event that I've ever attended. And I didn't know what to expect from this. I'm in on this. I really like it. I think, you know, maybe this was just a unique year where you had some really good races. And obviously the Mets collapsing was fantastic. Seeing the highest payroll team completely fall apart was lovely. And them to miss out on the playoffs. So you have these little three-game sprints, and I like it. Four games today. All across the day. I mean, I got asked the question, is today better than opening day? And I think no, because if you're a Nats fan like me and your team has no chance of making the postseason, at least you have a glimmer of like, what if we're the magical team that makes the run? But I do love this stretch is awesome, man.
I'm open to the discussion that it is better now because we've bastardized opening day.
It's true.
We've ruined
that
it.
That is true.
And
we
so like this still feels pure. I'm with you. I was fine with the one game wild card. I mean, it's the old do or die baseball is just excruciating,
it's awesome.
But it's awesome at the same time. When we went to this format, I was like, okay, I want to see what it looks like before I make a judgment. The thing that I like about this is the one game wild card always felt to me like when you would see two teams tied for a division or for a spot and it was a play-in game.
Right.
This actually feels to me like you've made the playoffs. Like, I know you don't get a home game. You're not guaranteed a home game, but I don't know. The fact that it's a series to me still feels like it's the playoffs. So I've really enjoyed this format, but I think I'm in the minority.
And for example, right now we're watching Tigers and Guardians. The Guardians had to face Scooble. It's like, if that's a one-game situation, you're kind of toast.
Yeah.
Now, they could come back and win this game today. It's 2-1 in the eighth. But you have a chance tomorrow to beat a team when they don't have their superhuman ace on the hill.
It's why I also had a big problem of, like, math. It's one of those things where when you're watching the Tigers blow, I mean, everyone did the whole 14 and a half, but like that was July. What was more fascinating to me
is 9.5 in the start of September.
I think it was 11.5 on August 22nd. Like that's where to me it's like you throw those numbers out, it's like there's a lot of baseball to be played. A lot of things can happen in basically 3+ months of baseball. But when you're basically talking about you have an 11-game lead or double-digit lead with basically 30 games to go, that is really hard to blow. But it's also why I was a little hesitant to sit there and act like it's the greatest collapse ever, because it's like, well, they're still probably getting in.
If they didn't get in, I think it would have been
right
up there for the greatest
collapse.
Yeah, no,
if they
ever
don't get in, that's fine, I'm fine. But like to me, it's like, can we sit there and go, this was an unbelievable collapse if they go and they're, you know, they need to get 6 outs to win this game. I'm not saying it's a one-run game. It's far from over. I've watched enough baseball to know that.
The boys got under 6, so let's not get weird here in the final couple innings.
But my point is, like, if they were to win this three-game series, like, I don't know. Like, I have a tough time going, man, that was the greatest collapse of all time. Like, to me, I think you have to miss the playoffs.
Oh, I totally agree.
Or if they got, I guess I'd be into it if they got bounced here. If they got bounced in the next, like, let's say they win this one but lose the next two, it's like, okay, I can listen to that.
I mean, I think if you're going to talk collapses, I mean, the Mets having the best record in baseball in June and then missing out on the playoffs, that is a collapse. And then on the final day of the season, all they have to do is beat the Marlins and you're in, and they got shut out. So to me, that was, I don't know if it's all time, but it's hilarious knowing that they're the most expensive roster in baseball.
All right, so let's talk a little college football. We'll get into our awards during the next segment. We'll get into the list to start hour number two. We had pretty much an all-time rant today against the WNBA and the commissioner, so we'll get into that as well as a few other stories. Also take a look at some of the lines this week. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But I kind of had this thought over the weekend, and you know, we were talking about it last week. Would the week deliver? I think unquestionably the week delivered. We got a good mix of chaos, a good mix of watching teams that were trying to, like, we were trying to figure out what they were, and I think we answered some questions. But the other thing that really stood out to me was that I'm really, yes, I will always miss the gut-wrenching, your season's over loss. Ohio State losing to Michigan, I will miss the fact that that did not cost them a national title. But I think it's also fair to say this. We don't live in the era where there are the mega Manda Death Star super teams that really, no, like, there's only, the only ones that can compete are them with themselves. So 3 or 4 teams a year that can really only compete with themselves. That era's gone. And so if you're going to acknowledge, hey, there's not those kinds of teams, I think you need to give some incentive to have teams play big games and go for it. And like that was kind of what we saw this weekend. You had Franklin going for it on fourth down. You had Lanning going for it on fourth down. But that's nothing new, as we've talked about on the show. Like that's who he is at his core.
That's who he is, yeah.
But Kirby Smart went for it a lot on fourth down. And I think the fact that we now have the reality that you can have a mulligan. You don't have to be perfect. You can have a mulligan, and you're still very much in this thing. You might even have 2 mulligans in certain extents. And what it's done to me is I think we've maintained what I love about the sport, which is the pageantry and the big game feel. This weekend, it felt like we had big games throughout the country. I love the atmospheres. I love the crowds, all of that. But we're still not saying your season's over with. Here is my fear. I also think the 12-team playoff plays into this in the sense that I like the number 12 because I feel like we don't leave out national champions, and I feel like we're actually rewarding teams that make it. I know maybe some Tennessee fans or SMU fans or Clemson fans or Indiana fans are still, you know, well, people were laughing at us in our first-round matchup. It's like, you made the playoff. It was an accomplishment. It deserves to be celebrated. And I like the fact that it feels like a reward. Here, however, though, is my concern. You ready?
I'm ready.
I took a look at the SEC, and according to FPI, there are still 10 teams that have between a 36 and a 1% chance of making the SEC title game or winning the SEC championship. All right, you ready? Those teams are in order: Alabama, Ole Miss, Texas, Georgia, Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, no joke, Vanderbilt. Again, you and I have been on this. This ain't, they may have Vanderbilt helmets, but like you gotta get used to it. This is a good football team. Missouri, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and LSU. So that's 10 teams. Tim, they play, there are 38 instances where the top 10 teams with the top 10 best chance teams play each other. I find it almost a certainty that the SEC championship game is going to include teams with a combined 4 losses, if not more. And here's where my concern starts to lie. If we get into this scenario where, let's say, all right, let's play this out reasonably. Florida State wins at home this weekend against Miami.
Okay.
I guess so. Miami doesn't play Tech this year, right?
Miami
does not play Georgia Tech. And I know, I still think Georgia Tech's taking an L somewhere, but, you know.
I mean, they should have lost this weekend if the refs weren't idiots.
Correct. But,
I mean, Wake Forest completely jobbed.
I did love Dickert going for two, though.
Yeah, I liked it.
It was the second overtime. You're going to have to go for two the next overtime anyway.
I love that. I want more coaches to do that. If you've got the chance for no rebuttal at the end of the first overtime, knowing you have to go for two in the second overtime, I love the decision for them to go for it there. I totally agree with that.
All right, but let's play it out. Let's say Tech loses somewhere and we get a Miami-Florida State rematch in the ACC championship game and Miami wins the rematch.
Okay, so you got Miami 12-1 and
Florida State at 11-2
with a win over Miami.
I feel and a win over Alabama. I feel pretty confident in saying they're getting in.
Yeah, so that would be two ACC teams in.
Okay.
What about an 11-1 Georgia Tech? So there, Georgia Tech is still undefeated, right?
So in that case, yes, they are still undefeated. And the case that you're mentioning is their loss to Georgia.
Oh, I forgot they have Georgia. Okay. No, because in order for them to not make the ACC championship, they would have to lose another game. 10-2, Georgia Tech is out. I think it's fair to say. Whether it's fair or not, the win over Clemson is not.
I agree with you. Let's
be real. And I'm a Notre Dame fan, and I try to be honest. If they're determining Georgia Tech with 10-2 or Notre Dame 10-2, come on, buddy. Who do you think's getting it?
Well, and to me, the other aspect of this is like I find it hard to believe Notre Dame wins 10 straight that they're not getting in. Because I also don't think they want to punish a team for going, well, you lost to two games by a combined 4 points, and I don't think they want to decentivize scheduling those games.
And also if Miami's the ACC champ, it helps.
Correct.
But all right, so to your scenario, we got Miami at 12-1 ACC champ. I think Miami at 11-2 and losing to Florida State twice, I think they still get in because they would have that win over Notre Dame.
Okay, so then let's say Ohio State and Oregon go undefeated and meet in the championship game. Penn State and Indiana play each other, correct?
Yeah, Indiana plays Oregon and Penn State.
And are we still keeping Michigan on the fringe?
Sure.
All right. Then
they lost yet? No, they lost to Oklahoma. Sorry.
They lost to Oklahoma. All right. Then I still feel, I don't even know if it's deserved. I still think the Big 12 is only getting one team in.
Yeah, they're going to eat each other up. It's hard to look at the losses now, but it's late September. They'll eat each other up. But going back to the Big 10 real quickly. So Ohio State, Oregon in that scenario, lock in. Penn State with two losses and a... Would you say the winner of Indiana-Penn State is in?
Yes.
Okay. So Penn State, Indiana winner. That's in Happy Valley. Indiana winner. Okay. So that's five.
All right. So we have our G5 champ.
Yep. G5. One, which, two, by the three, way, four. According to DraftKings, Memphis is the betting favorite to be the G5 representative. Not a massive favorite, but they have the shortest odds out of any G5 team.
I think it's also possible they're avoiding the second best team in the league,
which is
North Texas.
North Texas is pretty good.
All right. So then, so if we give.
So we got G5, Big 12. Now we're at seven.
Okay. So we know. Did you include Tech? Texas Tech?
I just said Big 12.
Okay. Big 12. Okay. If the SEC gets five in, well, then I think this format's here to stay. I find it really hard to believe that five teams between potentially two, three, and maybe, like, I guess you can envision a world where Oklahoma sneaks in. Let's say one of Oklahoma's losses
is without Mateer.
Or let's say they lose two without Mateer, and then they, like, let's say, I think 8-4 should be. You should just be dismissed. I understand it's unfortunate and whatnot, but can we all just agree, like, an 8-4 team does not deserve to be in?
I mean, we never saw a 2-loss team get into the 4-team playoff, and we didn't see a 3-loss team get into the 12-team playoff a year ago. Now, I think we'll see a 3-loss team this year. I think when you look at the SEC, there's going to be some carnage. I mean, look, Alabama, with a massive win this weekend, their schedule remaining, Vanderbilt, Missouri, Tennessee, at South Carolina, LSU, Oklahoma, Auburn. Right now, that is five teams in the top 20.
Alabama has the 13th, this is again, according to ESPN FBI, the 13th hardest remaining strength of schedule.
Really?
Yes. Because even their games that they'll be heavy.
They have like Eastern Illinois. And
I think they Auburn do. I want to say they have a SoCon Saturday game. I only listed the SEC games, but Alabama, to your point, plays five other teams remaining in the 10 best odds to win the SEC. Ole Miss has Georgia and Oklahoma, so someone's losing each of those games. They
By
also
the way, can we just say this now? If Ole Miss now, I think the Egg Bowl is going to be.
You and a lot of Ole Miss fans out there.
That is not going to be easy. But if they just play out the stretch and win the games they're supposed to win, Ole Miss is in the playoff thanks to the win this weekend.
Yeah.
Because they lost. They have Georgia and Oklahoma on the road. You can lose those games. And if you beat Mississippi State, which is a big if, but if you win that game, you're in the playoff at 10.
I'm in the same boat with Ole Miss that I was in with Indiana last year. There was never going to be an 11-1 Big Ten team that was left out. I didn't care what their helmet said. If they were 11-1 in the Big Ten, they were getting in. We could have made all the arguments about the strength of schedule that we wanted to, but that was just the reality. Like, there are many other teams, I think, out there that would have had at least an 11-1 record with Indiana's schedule. Tough. Like, that was the case.
It's the nature of the beast.
If Ole Miss goes 10-2, they are in the playoff.
Agreed.
So Texas has not played a conference game left. Texas has eight remaining conference games, including Red River, not this week, but next. They play
without Mateer, more than likely.
Without Mateer. So they have their remaining schedule is Florida this at Florida this week.
Be careful.
I get what you're saying, because if you can't score almost every game, but they're going up against a team that is also inept on offense.
I know. Just be careful. Be careful when you punch that bet and you say, wow, 6.5, this is an easy winner.
It sounds like a lot like Florida State and Virginia. They will have Red River next week, at Kentucky, at Mississippi State, Vanderbilt at home, at Georgia, Arkansas at home, Texas A&M at home. Georgia's remaining strength of schedule is number 26th in the country, so 26th most difficult. They have Kentucky this week, at Auburn next week, Ole Miss at home, Florida in the neutral, at Mississippi State, and Texas at home. They already have one conference loss as well. I think it's entirely possible Georgia's losing another game.
Oh, for sure.
A&M their remaining strength of schedule. 22nd in the country. Mississippi State, Florida, both of those at home. At Arkansas, at LSU. At Missouri. South Carolina at home, at Texas. I think it's likely Texas A&M's losing two games.
Probably.
Vanderbilt, at Bama this week, LSU at home next week, Missouri at home the following week, at Texas, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, at Tennessee. Vanderbilt's at least losing two games.
If not three, yeah.
Correct. Missouri's remaining strength of schedule. Bama at home next week. At Auburn, at Vanderbilt, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, at Oklahoma, at Arkansas. I feel pretty confident Missouri's losing twice. They're going to be dogs next week, even though I think you and I will probably be on them. I can already just feel that. I don't love the A&M matchup for them. At Oklahoma, feels like late in the season when Mateer's clearly going to be back. Like, that's not really a spot. Like, I just think they're probably losing twice.
Oh, yeah. No, I...
Oklahoma, Texas, at South Carolina. Most likely Texas is going to be without Mateer next week.
Oklahoma will be without Mateer.
I'm sorry, Oklahoma's going to be out with Mateer next week. They have at South Carolina.
Careful.
Ole Miss at home. At Tennessee. At Alabama. Missouri at home. LSU at home. I think they're losing at least twice. Tennessee's remaining schedule. Arkansas at home, at Alabama, at Kentucky, Oklahoma at home, at Florida, Vanderbilt at home. Tennessee already has one league loss. I still think they're losing one more time, at the minimum. Are we in agreement?
Yep.
And then finally, LSU, who also has a loss, South Carolina at home, at Vanderbilt, Texas A&M at home, at Alabama, Arkansas, at Oklahoma. I think it's safe to say LSU's losing at least one more time.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start to go through this, it seems to me, I suppose you can say Bama, whose one loss is at a conference play, I suppose you can say they're going to get in at least with just one loss. Although, as awesome of a win, and I want to be very clear, I'm not taking anything away from them. Do you trust the Alabama team that we've seen the last 2 years to not have a letdown or two the remaining stretch?
Well, it's hard. It's hard to trust them when you've had five losses. Is it five or four? Four losses as a two touchdown favorite or more under Kalen DeBoer. So it's
five. It was four last year. The Tennessee loss was not a two-touchdown loss.
Right. Last year was Oklahoma, Vanderbilt, Michigan in the bowl.
Yep.
This year was Florida State.
Yep.
So it's hard not to. Now, there was a reason, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn because I also thought Clemson was going to be the ACC champ this year. How's that working out? But I really like this Alabama team coming into this year. And some of the wrinkles you saw from Grubb in the first half and some of the physicality you saw from that defense – makes me really like this Alabama team, but I think it's fair to look at that schedule and say, you've got to be buttoned up pretty much every week. I mean, that schedule, I know it was 13th
Their quote-unquote easy games, setting aside the SoCon Saturday game, is at South Carolina and the Iron Bowl.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't care what Auburn's record is. You know they're going to play hard, and they're going to play well in that game.
And that team's talented.
Right. I mean, so there's, like... Missouri, what do we know about Missouri? I don't know, but all I know is that game's in Columbia, and that's going to be a weird spot where you're coming off. I mean, think about the stretch here for Alabama. So you had Georgia in an insanely physical game. Now you've got College Game Day coming to town for Vanderbilt, which forever was a easy layup. Now it's not. And then you have to turn around and go to Mizzou before the third Saturday in October. And, oh, by the way, after the third Saturday in October, you've got to go to Williams-Brice, which, yes, I get it. South Carolina, to me, and I'm curious if you would agree with this, South Carolina, to me, has now gone the full 180 to where now I like them. I didn't like them preseason. I thought they were overrated. Then they lose a couple of times, and people are like, they stink. And now I'm like, I think they're kind of good with a quarterback that could very well be a first-round pick, and they're at home.
I think they have a pretty good defense, and I think they have a quarterback that is capable of taking over a game.
Right.
So
you're talking about a stretch here. I'm just thinking about this stretch.
To me, like,
for
that's the formula of a team that's going to ruin somebody's season.
Like, this stretch for Alabama, the fifth game of this stretch goes at Georgia, home to Vandy, College Game Day, at Missouri, home to Tennessee, and the fifth game of that stretch is on the road at Williams-Brice against a quarterback that you pointed out, and I think it's a fair assessment, can take over a game. That's the fifth game in a row. Like,
against the defense that struggles with running quarterbacks.
Is Alabama going 5-0 through that stretch? I don't think they are. They're going to lose one of these next four games. I don't think they lose this weekend. I think they
correct. No, I'm with you. But my whole point is, okay, now if we start to get into this list of, you know, let's say if Bama goes 10-2, if we start to get into this situation where all of these teams have between 2 and 3 losses, and obviously all 10 are not going to be a part of the conversation. Some will dismiss themselves. But if we're sitting here debating 6 or 7 SEC teams that are between 2 and 3 losses, I find it hard to believe that 4 of them are getting in. To me, that opens the door for another Big Ten team that maybe you don't think is all that good. Maybe the Penn State Indiana loser finishes 10-2, and all of a sudden that bumps out one of those 1 or 2 of those 3 lost teams. You see what I'm saying?
No doubt.
And this is where my fear is.
And one of the wild cards is going to be, especially what we saw this weekend, heading into last Saturday, I would have said, there's no way Notre Dame's going to run the table. And I'm not saying that Arkansas beating them by 6 touchdowns is this massive accomplishment, but if you watch that game, and Notre Dame still has plenty of issues defensively, plenty, that offense looks like a top 5 offense in college football.
No, it's the weird reality is you thought coming into this year, okay, we trust our defense, and they're going to bring the offense along. We got a young quarterback, but maybe by the time that we get to the middle, later part of the year, he's comfortable and he's playing good football. Well, no, the reality is the opposite. The offense is allowing the defense to kind of figure out personnel, maybe figure out what they can and can't do.
And you kind of felt that in the Arkansas game,
yeah,
where Arkansas, after kicking a field goal on their first possession, Notre Dame scored right away, and you could sense, oh my God, we have to score every single time against this offense. So my point is, Notre Dame at 10-2 without a quality win, more than likely, because USC just lost to Illinois, and who knows if they'll beat Michigan the week prior to playing Notre Dame. But now you might have a 10-2 Notre Dame in the discussion. And then there's the Big 12 wrinkle where, you know, what if Texas Tech is 12-0 and then loses the Big 12 championship game, right? There's a lot of unique wrinkles, but I still am fine with 12. I know there's going to be people who are going to say, this is why you have to go to 16.
This is my actual fear. I think we've actually figured out the format. Like, I think this is going to work. Especially, I think when we see the playoffs get seeded actually 1 through 12, and we get the first weekend games are going to be 5-12, 6-11, 7-10, 8-9. I don't think we're going to have a bunch of blowouts. We might have 2 blowouts, but I don't think it's going to be 4 games that are all blowouts and the favorites just cover. My worry here, though, is the conference that is going to, if they think that they wind up getting screwed because their league has way more depth and it costs them, this is my fear, is then it just starts to go to 16, or we start to, then all of a sudden the SEC, because think about this. The SEC originally was cool with, I want 12 at-large teams.
Yep.
That was their original stance. Well, what happened last year? They only got 3 teams in, and they thought SMU shouldn't have been in, Indiana shouldn't have been in. All right, all of a sudden the SEC is now all in on automatic qualifiers. I'm now very worried that if the same thing happens to them again, they're going to wind up partnering with the Big Ten, and they're going to come up with one of these dumb ideas, and it's going to actually decrease what I think is actually working.
The playoff is supposed to be hard to get into.
Correct.
And if we go to 16, I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's a whole hell of a lot easier than 12. And I get it. The SEC, the depth of the SEC is much better than the Big Ten. You could argue the Big Ten's top is better. You could argue that Oregon and Ohio State are maybe the two best teams in the country. I would listen
to it. I actually think that's true.
I would say as of right now, I would agree with that because Alabama has a loss.
I would favor Oregon against every team in the SEC. Would you not?
On a neutral, probably not.
You would favor who?
Probably.
You would take, okay, let's just do it like this. It's Oregon and Alabama on a neutral.
I would take Alabama, but I'm not saying that an odds maker would make it okay. That way. You might be more accurate. I've seen
Oregon or Georgia. I mean, to your point, Oregon did just play a game as an underdog. Granted, it was a road game, but three and a half to me suggests that.
I think Ohio State's the best team in college football. I think
I'm fine. I'm fine with that. Okay, so let's is there a team you'd favor? Is there a team that Ohio State would be an underdog against in the SEC?
I mean, on a neutral, probably not. Maybe I don't know. Texas was a favorite at Ohio State, right?
And I think if they would have played it the next week, they would have flipped it. Because remember that line danced.
Yeah, it was. No, I think where we're at right now is Texas is kind of the great unknown. I still think they're power rated high, but they haven't really played anyone since week one. Ohio State, I think, can I say this? And we'll get into our awards on the other side of the break. I think by far the most overlooked performance of the weekend is Ohio State. To go to Seattle and to just eliminate that offense is wildly underappreciated right now, in my opinion.
Honestly, the way the game script worked, Washington should have covered that game based on how Ohio State played it, and Ohio State just erased them.
Yeah. I mean, you have a trio for Washington that I know a lot of people don't watch and care about because they're up in the Pacific Northwest.
Now, Washington did have real line injury problems.
Yes. But I'll say this. Is there a better unit in college football than Ohio State's defense?
I think it's fair to say this. The only other possibilities are somebody else's defense. Because, like, if you think about it in these terms, is what Texas's defense did to Ohio State more impressive than what Ohio State's defense did to Texas now that we've seen Texas, like, struggle against UTEP?
Yeah. I mean, that's a fair way to look at it.
So, to me, like, the other possibilities are...
How does Florida... Like, I really want to bet Florida this week. How do they score?
Turnovers? I mean, do you really trust that Arch is going to go to the swamp and not like and play clean football?
No.
But that is a no touch for me. How can we truly trust that Florida is still in this?
Man, I really want to bet him.
I will say this.
I've done it twice now. If you're doing like a moron twice in a row.
If you're doing
the LSU one, I would say I didn't look like a moron. DJ Lagway threw five picks.
Okay, but that's part of it.
I know.
He's going up against a better defense. Now he gets him.
By the way, is there a result that has aged worse than LSU's win over Clemson?
Texas is back.
Well, 2016 Texas is back, folks. Well, I'm saying this year in 2025. Like a big time result. I'm not talking about.
Yeah,
like,
no,
off the
I, no, no.
Like LSU, the talk was, and look, I was guilty of it. I'm like, whoa. They went down to Death Valley against a team with number one returning production, all this, yada, 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 yada. Garrett Nussmeier made big throws. And it's not to say that LSU's a bad football team, because they're not, and they have a very good defense. But that offense, you're just like, all you got is Garrett Nussmeier.
So a couple of things with LSU. Number one, they were like on their seventh and eighth. George helped me out. It was like seventh and eighth offensive linemen. They had a starting tackle get hurt in warmups
yeah.
that didn't play. And then they had another linemen get hurt. So I'm not. This is not a Ole Miss fans. Don't think this is a diminishing the win. What I'm saying is, and honestly, for Ole Miss fans, you should hope for this. There's a world in which I can see LSU getting better. They get healthier on the offensive line. I think Nussmeier's clearly hurt. The oblique thing is, like, he just doesn't have the zip on the ball. Like, it's clear to me that he's hurt, and they get their running back back. So there is a world to me where LSU's offense doesn't look as bad as they have the last couple of weeks. But this is, to your larger point, I just think we might start to see this happen more frequently with these big games. These
weird,
big games
weird
early.
Stuff happening
weird
Cleveland.
Stuff happening in Cleveland. The
two base error on the first play of the bottom of the ninth.
Weird stuff is happening. I love how we all just like looked up.
Yeah.
I got under six, and this is not going to be. I need a walk off homer.
Yeah.
No extra innings.
It's tough to score a lot in
X. Oh, you got to make that pick, dude.
Yeah,
as a former first baseman, I know it's in the dirt, brother, but you got to.
Oh, no,
but
that was a long hop. No, that's an easy pick.
That's an easy one.
You know what happened? To me, it looked like, and again, you're a first baseman. He went so far down to the ground, it actually took like a nice natural hop. And I think he thought it was going to be like one of those low skippers.
Yep.
And so he went down, and then it actually like took a hop that was going to be ended up being chest high.
I think he got confused. He thought, yeah, to your point, he didn't read it right, and he went to try to stretch it and kind of pick backhand on the short, and he should have just waited back and let it just bounce right in.
Okay, but back to the whole aging thing, because then we'll take a break and get into our awards, because we're going to talk some baseball during the list. I think you might actually see this more in this era where big week one game, the team that loses, I think we need to highlight them. Because I think I don't really think Florida State's talent said they should have been 2-10 last year. But lo and behold, they lose to Georgia Tech in Ireland. They come back in the weird BC game, and BC was game for it. And then all of a sudden they've lost twice. I think Clemson is probably better than what they've shown. Like, I'm not saying they're a great team, but they're better than what they've shown. But I think the way that the season played out, it's like that win's not going to age that well. But I'm not sure of like when LSU beat them that night that it was unimpressive.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Now, I in that environment, the pressure down that game, I think that's totally fair, especially to their coach. They had not won a week one game since 2019. So there was a lot of pressure there. I don't want to diminish it, but I think we overrated it. And I certainly was guilty of it.
No, I totally agree. And it's kind of why in the end, like, I think that's why it showed Ole Miss ended up being favored in that game. Like, right. I think there was not that much respect given to it. All right, let's recap the week that was. We will get into our awards when we come back, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Final from Cleveland, the Tigers defeat the Guardians in game one by a final of 2-1.
Woo!
Congrats to Tim on picking up the W for the under. Also, base running, kids, remember it.
No. Toot bland.
All right, we'll get into the list during the next segment. We'll talk a little more base.
Do you know what toot bland means?
Let's see. We'd never had that acronym in base running.
Thrown out on the bases like a nincompoop.
I mean, I just think for that one, it's the go on contact. I've never been the biggest fan of go on contact, but maybe it's because I wasn't that fast.
It was a tricky play. It was a high hopper to the pitcher, but not high enough. Sometimes those high hoppers, you could just speed in, and if you could slide low, right, you get that quick throw, but it just wasn't high enough, and Ramirez got caught in no man's land. I mean, he made the aggressive move on the throwing error to go from first to third. And then I think he just, they must have been feeling like go on contact.
I mean, it's just the classic.
Just he read it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I did not fault him. I faulted the strategy. Like, I've never loved the go on contact. Like, you needed a fly ball to the outfield there anyway. Like, that was what you needed. We'll get into more baseball in a minute. All right, team of the week. I'm going with Oregon, and here's why I'm going with Oregon. They did something that I'm not saying I didn't think that they could do, but they did something that they really haven't proven to me that they could do under Dan Lanning, which was go on the road, really tough environment. We have seen over the last couple of the years, these teams that are on these massively long trips, they don't play their best football. And it was one of those things where even if they didn't come away with the win, I think I would have changed my opinion on them because they basically kind of played Penn State's game, and I just thought they were the better team. And I want to tip the cap to them because in this era that we're watching of these teams that are traveling so far, like they showed up in a tough spot, and like I left thinking they were the better team.
Can't argue with that. I'll give it to Alabama.
So, no problem on that either. Yeah, snapping something that hasn't been done this decade.
I mean, they have to come out and look as beautiful as they did out of the chute. Once again, reminded you, hey, this Ryan Grubb, Kalen DeBoer thing is actually pretty legit, and we've got a lot of proof of that. And I got to give Ty Simpson a lot of credit. I know we'll get into Heisman here in a little bit, but Ty Simpson I thought was tremendous. I mean, he dropped that touchdown pass to Bernard in the basket, and he dropped it, right? So it was Bernard who dropped the pass, right?
Yeah.
Or was it Williams? I thought
it was
Bernard.
Williams? I think Williams dropped one.
One of them dropped a wide open. Like he had the step. It was a beautiful throw, and he dropped. Well, regardless, I'll give it to Alabama. I mean, to go down there, the season's over if they lose that game because we went through the schedule already. They're not running the table if they lose on Saturday. Now they have wiggle room where you can lose another game. You've got the trump card of win over Georgia. You got to avoid the bad loss, but Alabama has erased the Florida State game now because of that win. And that's why I'll give it to Alabama.
So then to my Heisman winner, my week five Heisman winner, I was giving it to Ty Simpson. The only reason why,
I'll give it to Dante Moore.
Yeah, I just split the difference there. So Horton had a drop. Yeah, it was Williams that had the drop.
It was Williams, okay.
Yeah.
I can remember.
Because there was a joke going around, Williams would have caught it if it was a stuffy.
I'm missing that.
Apparently, he has a lot of Caleb Williams personality.
Gotcha.
And that seems to be what a lot of people are having. The reason why I'm also giving it to Ryan Williams, because like you said, if you read the stats, it's not like, oh my God, that was the best passing performance of the week. 24 of 38 for 276 and a touchdown, also had one on the ground. But to me, the reason why I'm giving it to him, God, was he good on third down. On third down, he was just phenomenal. 12 of 19 passing on third down, 63.2% conversion rate. On third and long, he was still one of three. All other third downs, let's see, he went then 11 of 16. Like, I don't know. I just thought the whole game, they basically, Georgia was saying, like, we wanted them to be in third down and we wanted to make them pass. Because until the last drive, I don't really felt like Alabama kind of got cooking running the ball. And so it was largely all on him. And, man, I just found myself so impressed because he had to make so many big throws and he did it consistently. And honestly, it was like the easiest throw of the game he had was the third down to seal the game.
Seal the game, yep.
I think had that been a tie game, I think he was going to throw deep because that was the other thing about Georgia. Both guys were open. I don't know if you saw the tight end that was breaking on the corner route. He was wide open, and he just threw the quick one. But I found myself thinking, if they get that level of play for Simpson, I'm right back to where we were this summer of, I feel pretty good about Alabama.
I do too. So shout out to both DraftKings and FanDuel. I can't bet either in Nevada. Now, I've got ways to...
We all have syndicates. We'll have teams.
They leave up their Heisman odds during games. All of Vegas takes them down. So I was sitting there watching Alabama, and they're up 14-0. And I'm thinking to myself, if they win this game, Ty Simpson's the betting favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. And he was 17-1 at FanDuel and 15-1 at DraftKings. So I bet him 17-1 to win the Heisman. Dante Moore is now your betting favorite. And by the way, the Heisman this year, good luck, man. I mean,
why? I mean, that's the thing is like, you can, Even if you're waiting for a guy to have a big game, I don't necessarily, like, yeah, you're not getting the best peak value that you could have gotten, but because it's so open, I still think you're getting a decent return.
So I'll give you a couple runner-ups. I thought Jeremiah Love was out of this world against Arkansas. I know it's Arkansas's defense, but he had four touchdowns in the first half.
I told you they were going to be the cure for – I told you, like, you'll feel better about your defense.
His awareness of just, like, where dudes are coming from. They threw a ball in the flat, and it looked like he was going to get absolutely wrecked, and they just spun away and scored a touchdown. There was also a – like, one of the beat reporters from Notre Dame tweeted out a picture. I think it was of Jadarian Price, the other running back. And there were, like, six Arkansas defenders in the screen, and he scored a touchdown from, like, 40 yards out. So runner-up, Jeremiah Love. Runner-up, Trinidad Chambliss. Dude's a baller. But you got to give it to Dante Moore. You go on the road. I don't know if that's the most hostile environment in college football. I don't know if you listened to Stanford Steve on his podcast with Van Pelt, but he was like, yeah, top five. He's like, it's good. It's really good. But he's like, it ain't the SEC.
I think I don't know, because obviously I haven't been there, so I don't know about.
I've been to one. I went to one in 2007.
I don't know about noise level, but we said this. I said this yesterday to my buddy Cerrito. What they deserve credit for is the way that they light the stadium. Their whiteout pops so much more than everybody else. Like, I think the part of what makes
the
it
visual, yes, the visual is maybe the best visual,
yes,
in sports. I think that's fair. Because it's,
yes,
110,000 people all wearing white, except for the, what, the S in the one end zone and the sliver of opponents.
Yeah, Giannotto said he went to a game one year and they stuck him in, like, the upper deck. It was a whiteout game. They stuck him in the upper deck of, like, one of the corners of the end zone. He's like, that's how they mask it. But I was actually
in the lower bowl, in a little blue section, but for some reason I had Penn State fans, like, right behind me. It was, and that was the worst Notre Dame team maybe in my life. So that was super fun.
All right, I'm adding
Dante Moore. He was awesome.
I'm adding a new category: meanest play of the week. Notre Dame's fake punt against Arkansas, which was objectively a sick fake punt.
It was pretty nasty.
It was like a double reverse pass, like, to a wide open guy in the flat, but it was 42-13. And that was, like, the meanest play I've ever seen. And it was a sick fake punt. I tip my cap.
Can I ask a question?
Uh-huh.
When it happened, did Bobby Petrino have a smile on his face?
Oh, well, I think he had a smile on his face when he realized, like, very quickly there would be zero stops.
Yeah, that fake punt was, it's fair to say, that was pretty mean.
But sick fake punt. it was awesome. Like, yeah, well-designed
Marty Biagi, the former Ole Miss special teams coordinator, he dials up some pretty wild ones.
All right, back to most heavy-handed narrative. Tim, I can already tell, like, if you watch an Ole Miss game, you're going to hear Trinidad Chambliss is playing in front of more people today than he's played in front of his entire career.
Mm.
That one, they're really laying that one on thick. And then also, I don't know if it's just, like, doing shows with you, but it's like, man, I am the Notre Dame derangement syndrome is, like, I'm out on it. Like, if they go 10-2, if they win 10 straight games, I think they're a playoff team. And I'm just, like, I'm not here for it.
You're not here for
the
naysayers?
Yeah, it's just the picking apart of every resume. It's like, guys, we can do this to every freaking team.
Well, I think what's interesting to me, because I mean, obviously, Twitter's a lovely place. People are very kind and understanding,
totally,
and appreciative of your teams. And this team has massive holes. The defense has got serious questions. This offense might be the best offense I've seen in 20 years for Notre Dame since Brady Quinn was there. And I would agree. They wouldn't have any wins over big-time teams. But you can't say, well, they'll just go to the playoff and stink anymore, because they beat Georgia and Penn State a year ago. So that discussion is gone. I imagine we're going to talk Florida State, Virginia field storming.
That is coming up. So
all right, I'll hold off on that one.
Quick stock up. I think it was you and I that were talking about this, that we're going to look up in week, like, 6 or 7, and you're going to see Cincinnati's, like, 6-1, and everyone's like, wait, how did that happen? I don't think that's that bad of a football team.
Cincinnati's winning this weekend. They will beat Iowa State.
I really do not think that's a bad football team. Also, my just stock up in general, I think in this era, particularly in the SEC, situational football, like it's basically now like watching the NFL. Go look at what teams do on third downs. Look at what teams do in the red zone. With all these games that I think with these rosters that are pretty similar, situational football is going to be big. Like the reason why Ole Miss beat LSU, Ole Miss was really good situationally. LSU was not.
I don't know if this is stock up because I think we already knew this. The AAC is getting the bid to the playoff this year. It is, the odds tell you that. You look at this conference. This conference has, I would say, the four best teams in the G5. Like Boise State's, whatever. We'll see them this weekend. They're a 21-point underdog at Notre Dame. I think James Madison is pretty good, but they played a big boy and didn't fare all that well. I mean, the AAC, who has been shut out how many now years in a row? Last year, 2 years ago, was the ridiculous one where they put Liberty in over SMU, which was an abomination.
So 3 years ago? 24, 23, 22. Who got in
22?
Is that Cincinnati?
Yes.
Is that
so
the playoff?
Last time they got in was the playoff berth for Cincinnati, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Because Tulane would have got in, but they lost.
No. It went Tulane.
Tulane got in.
Tulane in 22, USC. Cincinnati's playoff 21.
Yeah, because Tulane beat
USC. Kelly takes the job when Notre Dame was still technically alive for the